You also did Holy Men, Sculptures of Holy Men, which you haven't talked about.
I just started doing that. Yeah. I only did BAPOC so far.
So far.
But I'm signed up to go to Glen Echo again in October. And for them, I never received a list. But, you know, there's that talk that BAPOC gave in England, which I'm very sure you've heard about. So, you know, so.
Describe that talk, where he was talking about specific holy men and started to...
Holy men, and that his appearance, his physical appearance changed as he talked about each one of them, and he looked like each one of them. And I've read two different accounts of it, but I think Leonard LaSalle's is the best because he's an artist himself, so he gives more vivid descriptions.
Right, more imagistic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it gives you more to work on.
So, you know...
When I've added one on my own.
And that is...
Moses, because my husband was doing an article for National Geographic on the footsteps of Moses.
Right.
And then I had this dream of Moses, and so I did a bronze sculpture of Moses, and it's not
there. Well, I have it right here on the computer, so I've seen it.
Oh, Moses?
I think, no, there's the BAPOC, no. But you did show me that. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, you did show that, right.
And so I figured, well, that's pretty, you know, I mean, I saw Moses in this dream, and I then, right after that, did a sculpture of him.
Parting the Red Sea, that, with a...
Parting the Red Sea, so, and some guy came up to me once and said, how come it's his left hand? And I said, I don't know, it's because that's how I dreamed it.
He was a lefty.
I did it like I dreamed it.
No one knew that Moses was a lefty, and there you received that.
I don't know that he was a lefty, but maybe he decided to use his left arm to do this. He wouldn't have to be a lefty.
Your intuition and your receiving ability seems to me to be world class, remarkable. Even before you were in Subud, your guidance from the inside seems to be rather impeccable. To what do you attribute that? Is it just a gift, or how can one begin to replicate that in their own lives? I'm reminded of Carolyn Mace, who said, you know, you ever get that intuitive hit that maybe you should clean the cat box or do the dishes, and you say, no, I'll do that later. Well, that's God talking. How do you expect to get the message, build an orphanage in Africa, until you pay attention to these little messages, right?
Right.
So can you talk about your God-given intuition and how you've developed that?
Well, I want to digress for a minute here to talk about my sister. I actually have two sisters in Sioux, but one's much more active than the other, and that's Lucia Marks, who lives in Portland, Oregon, and who has received all kinds of guidance and things, including dreams about the kind of work she needs to do to help people who have serious illness or who are dying. So it's just not just me.
True, but you're the closest to your experiences, and maybe from your experience we can learn and apply that in our own lives.
And also, I think this also was in 1987, but it was earlier in the year. There was a Subud East Coast Conference in Columbia, Maryland. That was like an important Lottie for me too, but it was also an important day. I had been chairman of a women's sculpture group, and we had arranged a show and gotten grant money to do a show, which we'd done at a couple places in Washington and also a couple places in Baltimore, of sculpture to touch that we had made so that everything had Braille labels and people could come and touch all the stuff. And we had a Braille catalog, and we also had a large type catalog. And so those shows had their openings on the same day as there was this Subud East Coast thing going on in Columbia. And so I went to I went to two or three openings, one after another, and I still knew I wanted to get to the Lottie in Columbia, Maryland, of the Subud East Coast Conference. And this is the only, I know other people in Subud have had this experience. This is the only time I had that experience. I had no idea how to go from the opening I was at to Columbia, Maryland, to this hotel. And I don't even know if I remember the name of the hotel or anything. But I wanted to go from one to the other, and I got in the car and started driving. And it's one of those things that people have these Subud stories where you just drove and you felt like, oh God, I got to turn here, I got to do this, I got to do that. And I drive there minutes before that Lottian started. But I got to the exact right place, parked the car, went in, and they were about to start Lottian.
Who needs GPS?
Well, but I've never had that experience any other time. There's people who talk about their feet guiding them places or being in the car like that, driving places. But I only had that one time happen. Yeah. Because I guess I had to be at that Ladihan. And so that was the Ladihan, which basically, one thing I had to do, I crawled around the room. I crawled on my hands and knees and was in front of each person. It was like, what percentage have they surrendered right now? And it was depressing because it seemed like the percentages were so low. It was very depressing. But then the rest said, then the next part of the Ladihan, though, was about how there were a number of people in Subud who had experiences that should write books about them and how important it was for these people to write these books. And then I had this image that there was this passageway. It was sort of the passageway that ought to be the way forward for Subud, but it was all blocked with timbers and things that had fallen. And
committee meetings.
I don't know, but it was all blocked. And it was like people writing these books would help clear it out and make there some open passageway for the growth of Subud.
Have you read Hadiya Carlisle's book, Torch in the Dark? Amazing book.
I haven't read that one. I've read a lot of them. I try to read the other ones. So at the end of that Ladihan, I don't know if you know who Ruth Jehoda was?
No.
She was like a very important feature of Subud in the East Coast. And she was an older woman, etc., who everyone really trusted a lot. And so at the end of that Ladihan, I asked Ruth, I said, I had this Ladihan, and I told her all about it. And she said she'd had a sort of similar Ladihan. And so we tested things about it together, and she said, I'll write an article about it. So she wrote an article about it that was published in whatever was the Subud USA publication at the time that was all about this, about how there are many people who needed to write books.
I want to ask you again about intuition, about your own intuition. Is there anything you could say about why you think you've been blessed with this ability?
I don't know about this ability particularly, but I would say that Thapak said in the very early days of Subud, he said there were people who had ancestors who were very spiritual, and that those ancestors had, I don't know how to say it, sort of like earned a place for you in Subud, being a member in Subud in the early days. Both sides of the Swedish side of my family, they were very devout, and Sweden had the state religion of Lutheranism, but they belonged to a different, more spiritual group than the Lutheran Church. And so they had to keep it secret because they got in trouble with the government if it was found out that they were whatever they were. And I can't remember what it was called in Sweden.
But it was more of a mystic experience, right.
And so that I had ancestors who were in this, and I always felt that they were really the ones. And at some point I inherited all these letters that they had gotten. And this was my great-grandfather or great-great-grandfather, I can't remember. I guess my great-grandfather. He came to the U.S. about 7 years after the end of the Civil War. And so I got all these letters that he got from Sweden that had come across in boats, you know. And then at some point, when Harvey was writing a story for National Geographic called about Hans Christian Andersen. And so we were going to all these towns in Denmark, because I'm half so half Danish, related to Hans Christian Andersen. So I got to visit, I had many relatives in Denmark who were into family history too. And so we traveled around Denmark, but we also went to all the places that were in stories of Hans Christian Andersen, like the Tilsanda Church, a church that was buried under sand. It's in one of his stories, and you know. And so we did all these things. But then, because it wasn't that far away, we went up to Sweden and traveled around and visited all my ancestors. And one of the guys in Sweden, an elderly man in Sweden, said, I have the other half of the letters. I have the half that were written back from America to Sweden. So I have both halves.
Wow.
I have all these letters from Sweden, which are mostly talk about religion more than anything else, and then all these ones from America back to Sweden, and that these were very, very religious people.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured if anyone earned my right. But then on the other side of my family, my grandfather came over from Denmark and worked in Chicago as a gardener for someone. He lived in a house they had, above their carriage house, they had a little space, and he lived there. And he was their gardener. But the whole time he was going to theological seminary, and he became a Methodist minister who actually, in the early part, he worked in churches in Minnesota and Iowa and things, where the services were in Swedish. And so he actually did service. He was Danish, but he did services in Swedish for years. And then later on, eventually, he did. After about when World War II came, people didn't want to be seen as foreigners, and people couldn't tell whether you're speaking German or Swedish or whatever, so they stopped doing Swedish and they did English.
There's one last thing I want to talk to you about, and that is the sewing circle that you had, and how that worked in conjunction with the Latihan as a way to, you know, make sense of how things were going and how this is might be a model for other Subud groups. Because, you know, we see the numbers in Subud going.
Oh, I think it is, and I think they all ought to do it. Something like that. It wouldn't have to be a sewing circle. It could be anything.
Obviously, it could be anything except chess. Maybe that's not the greatest idea. Okay, we get that, that maybe it should be collaborative instead of competitive. But, you know, this culture doesn't value old people. It doesn't value wisdom. And when I say this culture, I don't mean Subud culture, I mean U.S. American culture. And Subud obviously is different from that. That's why we're in it. We want something that we're not getting from the, you know, the culture that we have, which is a pop culture, which is an anti-culture. So what can we learn about tapping into the wisdom of elders like you were at that time? What can we learn about that?
Well, and it was especially great because a lot of us were younger women and we were newly Subud members. And then you'd have some of these experiences, and you had maybe questions about them or things that you wanted to, or even if you didn't have questions, just being able to talk about some of the experiences you had was good. And then the older people could share some of their ideas and experiences with you. So it was just, it was enormous. It was one of the really lucky things I had about Subud, is that I was open in New York and Julia Schusterman was there with Sewing Circle.
I'm really grateful for your time. Thanks for doing this. I'm grateful for your work and for your commitment.
That was maybe more than you want to hear.
It was great. Are you kidding?
So.